please set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about the Big Book, about the 12 steps of recovery, about the program, about the people in the program, and most importantly, all spiritual terms, including you, God, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience for all these things. Please help us see the truth.
Amen.
Thanks, Bryce. So this reading that I thought I marked is called Practice. Practice. We're talking about practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is at the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring for several ways. First, it provides you a process and a means to maintain progress even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Brandon. I did not do this before, but I have a sponsor. He is a sponsor. I sponsor people, and they sponsor people. I have a home group. My home group is the Sunday night meditation meeting at Howe Place. We meet at 7 p.m. every Sunday. We meditate on the 3rd, the 5th, the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th step promises. We read the whole promise as a group. And we meditate on a specific line. And we have an experience with each line of each promise of our book. I'm also I was the group conscience chair. Now I'm just a member of that group. My CA home group is Beyond Human Aid. We meet at the Branches of Christ Church in Acworth, Georgia at 8:30 p.m. on Monday. There's also book study in that one. We usually get about 75-80 people at that meeting. If you're in Acworth, you should find me there. I'm taking a guy through the steps on Sunday before the meeting. He's on the first step. I have a guy that is quitting me that I meet with after the meeting. He's decided that he has power in his life and he doesn't want to be honest about it because his wife has texted me to find out how she can get help for her children because they've seen him drinking and he's keeping up the charade. I meet with two guys on Monday night. They're both in their fifth step. Over the phone, I got two guys, one guy that's in five, one guy that's on seven. On Tuesday, I meet with two guys that we just finished the first 11 steps, and they're endeavoring to go through the back chapters of the book. I just completed a set of steps myself earlier this year. So the circle and triangle recovery, of a regular meditation practice, a regular prayer practice, a regular vision practice, I do an evening review. I'm unaware of any amends that I currently need to make except for one that I'm just not willing to make at this point in time. Told you about my home groups, and I told you about which is the unity component of the triangle. And I told you about service, sponsorship. I take my spirit into service, and I think that's only one thing. I think that's sponsorship. What I'm doing up here for you tonight is service to the fellowship. When I'm carrying a meeting or cleaning up a meeting or setting up a meeting, that's service to the fellowship. Vital, vital. But I believe that the spirit side of the triangle is reserved for one thing and one thing only, and that's sponsorship. And if you're in balance in all three areas, you can't drink. You can't use. It's impossible. If you're regularly working the steps, cleaning up the past, praying and meditating, if you're regularly attending a group of people that can call you out on things, you have a group of 10-step buddies that you're communicating with, and if you're actively sponsoring, practicing all three legacies, it's impossible to drink. It's impossible to use. You're spiritually fit. Now, in the first session, we talked about the first 7 steps and how that's kind of this thing where we're building up to actually becoming a useful member of society and entering the world of the Spirit. Now, the 9th step promises, and the reason why I know they're the 9th step promises is because they come in the portion of the book that's about steps 8 and 9. Right before that, it says, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. You want to see somebody that has a theoretical spiritual life? I'll show you somebody that hasn't made any of their amends or very few of their amends. Once you start making your amends, the spiritual life is no longer a theory. You're living it. If you're struggling in your life in any area, look at your life and find out if you have any unfinished amends in that area. If you're struggling in your career, you probably have some career amends. If you're struggling in intimate relationships, you probably have some intimate relationship amends. If you're struggling with money, you probably owe some people money. This stuff is very practical and applicable. And when you look at your life and you see the things, it's certainly demonstrating to you how you are, not what you think and how you think you should be. It's demonstrating how you are showing up. Now, this part of the 9-step promise, before I actually knew what the 9-step promises were about, I didn't believe. This line that says, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Okay? It talks about it on page 124. It says, Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is a thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if, there's a condition here, one is willing to turn the past into good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors, make amends, and convert them to assets. The alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family, and frequently it is almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family, which has been relieved, owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So I'm 6 months sober, completed the steps. Bunch of strange circumstances happened where I don't go away to a retreat, which I like to go to. Right around the SEC Championship of 2011. I know the day because I was really excited about going and watching Georgia play in the SEC Championship against LSU. And God had other plans. Went to my Saturday morning meeting and I got a text message that said, if anybody is available to help out a guy, do a 12-step call. We can get him into sober living on Monday, but he needs a place to stay over the weekend. And well, I just happened to be free because my wife kicked me out and I didn't have anything to do. And so I didn't have any roommates. And so I was available, and I had no idea how to do a 12-step call. I read the chapter. I called a bunch of people, got some thoughts and ideas about how to do this. And I went and picked this guy up from a hotel. And I started telling him my story. I started telling him about the bankruptcy and the 8 jobs in 6 years, the wife that kicked me out, the kids that I hardly get to see, all the past relationships, business failure, all this stuff. As I'm telling him this story, he's crouching further and further down towards the floorboard of my car, and I'm assuming that he's getting ready to get sick of my floorboard, but I finished telling him my story, and I said, now you tell me yours. And he says, I don't have to, you just told it to me. Now, my sponsor and I have talked about that conversation multiple times and how, what would have happened if I hadn't had that? Would I be as geeked up about sponsorship and carrying the message and all this other stuff? I don't know. But you see, God's perfect, and God put that guy in my life. And his story was my story. And so I'm convinced that every single one of us in this room has a vital part to play in this entire experience that we call life. And if you don't play it, well, there's nobody else to play it. There's no two of us alike, because if there were two of us alike, then there would be no need for one of us. So we all have a very specific role to play, and we're all our energy force that animates us and is part of us changes the makeup of this room. This room has already changed just from the people that have been added and the people that have been subtracted from this room. The energy field's completely different. Plus, we got a belly full of food, and we're sluggish, and we got to walk around and do some other stuff. But the message you guys are sending me right now is completely different than the message you guys were sending me earlier today. So it's changed, and it morphs, and it changes, and it grows. And so what is that thing? What is that thing that morphs and changes and grows? And people get hung up on words a lot, right? Like the word God or whatever that is. This reading is called Donkey. Dismount your donkey at the summit. Some places in this world are very hard to climb, and people use animals. Each person can only ride one, and each animal might have a different name. The riders go up the trail in different orders, and they discuss their varying opinions about how their experiences. They may even have conflicting opinions. One traveler may think that the trip thrilling. Another may find it terrifying, and a third may find it banal. At the summit, all the travelers stand in the same place. Each of them has the chance to view the same vistas. The donkeys are put to rest and graze. They are not needed anymore. We all travel the path of spirit. The donkeys are the various doctrines that each of us embraces. What does it matter what each doctrine we embrace is, as long as it leads us to the summit? Your donkey might be a Zen donkey. Mine might be a Tao donkey. There are Christian, Islamic, Jewish, and even agnostic donkeys. Maybe even 12-step donkeys. All lead to the same place. Why poke fun at others over the name of their donkey? Aren't you riding one yourself? We should put aside both the donkeys and our interim experiences once we arrive at the summit. Whether we climbed in suffering or joy is immaterial. We are there. All religions have different names for the ways of getting to the holy summit. Once we reach the summit, we no longer need names, and we can experience all things directly. So there's a lot of people that have a lot of experience with trauma and things like that that they don't care to have shared. There's a lot of people that have shame and remorse and things over their experience of the things that they were doing when they were out there ripping and running and roaring. And like I talked about in the first session, if you understood pages 23 to 43, you would understand that you have no power, choice, and control, and that you are being driven. And that the shame and all the things that you have from all your past experience that you're walking around with, all the guilt and all that, well, that assumes that you have the ability to do different. that assumes that you have the ability to act in a different way than you were. But if you're being driven, you were just along for the ride. Okay? Now, don't get this mixed up. The wreckage that you caused, you still have to go clean up. But if you can truly get down with the fact that I have no power, choice, and control over what I'm doing when I'm running on self-will, then it allows yourself a little bit of grace. God's already granted it to you if you're sober for a day. Maybe you should cut yourself some slack. Okay? So if we truly have turned our will and our life over to the care of whatever that is, and we've truly agreed to go to any length, then this idea of amends is simply the process of cleaning it up. It's simply the process of how can I refine my spirit so that I can act in the most powerful way. Okay? So the question of forgiveness. As we forgive, like the part of the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive. As we repeat the great prayer intellectually, we are suddenly caught up and grasped as though in a vice, so that we must face this problem of separation from God. We must extend forgiveness to everyone. Notice that Jesus does not say, "Forgive me my trespasses and I will try to forgive others." He obliges us to declare that we have actually forgiven, and that he makes our claim to our forgiveness to depend upon that. Who could be so insane as to endeavor to seek the kingdom of God without desiring to be relieved of his own sense of guilt? We are trapped in this inescapable position that we cannot demand our own release before we have released our brother. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. Psalms 139:23. So this idea of me removing defects is not, I have no ability to do it. However, my defects are lessened by the process of amends. As I go out into the world and I start to make amends for being an asshole at some point in time, you know what I realize? I'm actually an asshole. And as I go to those past relationships and those past employers and those people I owed money to, the thing that I realize is that it's me that's created this separation. It's me that's created this scenario. But before I get to steps 8 and 9, I have no ability to understand and comprehend how that could be a block in any way. So I have to be thorough in the way that I work the first 7 steps. And then these 9th step promises start to mean something completely different. If we've been painstaking about this phase of our development, what is the phase? Amends. If we've been painstaking about amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as the result of making amends. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace as the result of making amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience with making amends and cleaning up the past can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows, because they'll start to realize as the result of amends that those people that I thought were harming me weren't so bad. It's just that they were up against me. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Why? Because I've cleaned up it all up with the other people and I've paid all the money back. Bless you. I will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me, and I will suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself, because I walked into all those situations with all those people that maybe wanted to harm me, and God kept me safe and protected. Are these extravagant promises? Fuck no, they're not. They're being fulfilled among us only as quickly or as slowly as we make our amends. They will always materialize if we make our amends. And then just in case you missed it, in the next several lines it says this thought. What's the thought? Amends. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. More amends, more amends, more amends. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past, as we made our amends. So I start practicing the 10th step when I start into steps 8 and 9. I can start it way earlier than that, but I have no ability to practice it without an enlightened spirit. I've entered the world of the spirit. And then people talk about steps 10 and 11 being maintenance steps. I don't know about that. It says right here, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So I'm learning to grow in the spirit world. I'm learning to grow in my interactions with others. I'm learning how to be useful. Because back here on page, I think it's page 19 and 20, I started this exercise where I had guys write on one side of a note card, most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and a viewpoint and a respect for their opinions or attitudes which make us more useful to others. And then on the other side, I had them write, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. What happens if you carry that around with you all day? How many of us spent our time figuring out how we could best meet the needs of others today? Or that part in amends where it says that we might pray for the other person's uppermost happiness, right? How would this world be different if we were all doing that? Because the 10th step, this is that walking around step. This is how I get to be an agent. It talks about in the third step that God's the principal and we're the agent. How would you like to be an agent of God? Because an agent is simply a person that carries out on behalf of the principal. Pretty fucking cool, huh? Just up here being an agent of God. Last night I was Iron Man. Today I'm an agent of God, right? And so this thing that I'm endeavoring to do is to continually to seek, to continue to go deeper into the experience of whatever God is for you, to explore it. To do weekends like this where we get to talk about spirit in a way that maybe we haven't thought about. We get to experience it in different ways. We get to be in one of the most peaceful places. I got to think on the earth with all this old growth wood around us. Think about, like, when you're in the city, think about all the organisms that are living and all the energy forces that are in there. Think about how many of them are positive and at peace. Okay? And then come out here and think about all the organisms and things that are around us, the trees and the animals and the insects, and the fact that our energy force is fucking a whole bunch of it up right now, right? What's that like? What's that like to carry that around all day long? What's that like to be present? To be connected? To look at the things around us and observe and be just in awe of the fact that, holy crap, I exist. This stuff's a little easier for me because, like I told you earlier, like, left to me, the thing I wanted to do was die. Maybe I died. I don't know. Because, like, if I really look at this existence coupled with the existence before whatever that experience was that I had, they don't really match up. I mean, there's some family members and things that are still around. My kids are still in my life. And I got a resume that travels. But the way that I show up, the way that I exist, is completely different than the way that I used to exist. And I don't know when that conversation took place, but the mother of my children, you'll also observe that I'm very intentional with my words and the things that I pick and the way that I choose it. So the mother of my children, okay, because what do most other people have? So if I'm talking about my ex, how many positive connotations get associated with my ex? Right? And so the minute that I speak that into existence, I'm already trashing that woman. I'm already trashing her existence. She's the mother of my children. She's the woman I chose to spend the rest of my life with. She's the woman that was the catalyst for the greatest experience I've ever had in my life, which is called surrender. Why would I speak ill of her? And you see, several years ago, my daughter, who's 16 now, so she was probably 11 or something like that. Daughter thinks I'm pretty kick-ass. So she's having this conversation with her mother where she's like, you know, Mom, why'd you want to get rid of Dad? And her response was, and I wasn't part of this conversation, it was reported to me through a series of channels, but her response was, the man that your dad is today was not the man that I was married to. You see, the doctor's opinion, he says that we get to recreate a life, okay? At the end of the third step promises, it says we were reborn, right? A new life. What does a new life look like? What if you could start a new life right now? What if you could change everything from this point forward? Would you do it? Everybody says yes. But am I powerless? Do I have the power to actually change? I don't. So I seek. I seek whatever this power is, whatever I'm connected to deepen that experience. 11th step says there are many helpful books. One may obtain this from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. I use the power of God. The God of love and peace shall be with you. 2 Corinthians 13:11. Have we really tried God? Since all the other methods have failed, a divine compulsion is laid upon everyone to find the power of God and make use of it. It is not merely a new theory about God that we are looking for. Rather, it is the actual power of God that we must harness. Our trouble is that we have not really believed that this presence exists and operates in human affairs. We have not realized the divine presence as a living and dynamic reality. What we need is the direct experience of a conscious contact with the divine. God is pure spirit, filling all space. This pure spirit animates your every act. There is a real you which lives in a real God. The two are one. To know this is to understand the secret of life. To realize this is to understand your relationship with the divine presence. To realize that the law of God is written in your own mind is to make it available to you a power that can meet your every need. Right now, I feel a flow of energy, light, and love filling my entire being. I know that I am one with the infinite, one with the infinite presence that fills my life with peace, harmony, and joy. I let go of all negative beliefs and affirm that love is transforming my life today. Hell yeah, get me some of that, right? Get me some of that. You see, doctor's opinion talks about the fact that we need a power that's as big, if not bigger, than that power that we were using to live our life by. The rest of the world doesn't understand. Like, drugs and alcohol are not my problem. Drugs and alcohol are my solution. My problem is living. My problem is I can't exist. I'm uncomfortable. I'm irritable. I'm restless. People aren't acting right. And I need something to numb out whatever that is so that I can exist. And so I turn to drugs and alcohol. And it numbs it out for a little while. But then I come back and it's still there. I numb it out harder and it's still there. Harder and it's still there. And eventually I get crushed by it. So I need something bigger than that. I need access to something that's got more power than that. And that's where the 11th step comes in, right? So there's enough of people in this room that used to have the old rabbit ears on their antenna or on the TV, right? And you had the UHF and the VHF, and then you couldn't change channels with a remote control. You actually had to go up to the TV, and you couldn't even change the channels on the TV. You had to change the channels on the thing that sat on top of the TV, and it had these antennas that went out, right? And there was the UHF dial, the VHF dial, and there were 13 numbers over here. There was, I don't know, some other numbers over there. And you would get this thing on channel, let's say, 3, and you would have it honed in, and this antenna is over here, and this antenna is over there, and the picture is crystal freaking clear. And you could see it perfect. And you come in the next day, and it's all lines. The antennas are doing the same thing, and you're like, what the hell happened? So you crush a little tinfoil on the end of it, and you're trying to do all this stuff, right? You're trying to make it work, and so eventually you're kind of adjusting them and you're thinking that you can get it. And at the end, the antennas are completely crossed, going the opposite direction, and it's clear again. And you're like, how the fuck does that happen? It's not even close to the way it was before. Well, that's life, right? That's what happens is the signal from channel 3 is constantly being broadcast. It is out there all the time. It's floating around. It's doing all sorts of stuff right now. Can't hear it, can't see it, because I don't have a receiver. So I got to get a receiver. And when I get a receiver, I have to tune it in. I have to hone the signal. And it's the process of honing the signal that allows me to receive the message and the image in front of me. That's meditation. The 11th step has 4 components. And we go to an 11th step meeting, and people talk about one of them. Well, I put my shoes underneath my bed, so I have to get down on my knees every day. And I have to pray. That's not prayer. It's getting down on your knees. Now, the act of getting down on your knees is an act of submission. It's an act of surrender. It's an act of worship. It's an act of saying, I'm at your mercy to do whatever you want with me. So it's a ritual. If the ritual is good for you, do the ritual. It's unnecessary. What if thoughts were prayers? Anyone? One of the first workshops we ever did, I said that. I will thank this guy forever. I have no idea who he is. He sat in the back of the room way over there. I said, what if thoughts are prayers? The room was quiet. And then the guy said, well, then those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. And I said, thank you. That's my point. I mean, most people believe that God has the ability to see them and interact with them wherever, right? And God knows what I'm thinking. Well, if God knows what I'm thinking, then isn't that a prayer? So if, let's just say then, if a thought is a prayer, would I endeavor to clean up my thoughts? Would I endeavor to clean up my judgments? Would I be much more intentional with the verbiage that I use in my everyday? Because the thing that I've learned from sponsorship over the years is there's a whole group of dudes out there that they're just the dialogue in their head and that they speak into existence is all sorts of negative. How you doing today? Not bad. What's the word you hear there?
Bad.
Yeah. Slight change. I'm doing well. Now I'm speaking in the affirmative. Now I'm speaking in the positive. I'm putting a prayer out into the universe that's positive instead of negative. Because if I'm praying for not what I want, what might I get? Not what I want. If I pray that I want more money, what might I get? A want of more money. So it says prayer, and it says we may pray for ourselves, however, if others will be helped, right? So, just curious, if I'm struggling financially and struggling in relationships and struggling in my career, how attractive is that going to be to the newcomer?
Not much.
No. But if I'm praying to God to make me useful, and I'm praying for abundance so that it can look like this sobriety thing's kind of attractive, who knows, I might end up with a smoking hot redhead. Because I did.
Yeah.
So, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. If we go to an 11-step meeting, people might talk about prayer and meditation. You don't hear a lot of people talking about the evening review and the practical application of the evening review, do you? We don't hear a whole lot of people talking about vision work and creating a vision for their life, do we? It's in there. In the 10th step, it says this groovy kind of thing that I like. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Laurels is past accomplishments. I can't live off the food I ate a week or a month ago. I can't live off the spiritual experience that I had a week or a month ago. I have to have a new experience every day. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol and drugs are a subtle foe. We're not cured of our alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve. Anybody know the definition of reprieve? The stay of execution. Ooh, wow. What we really have is a daily stay of execution. I do not get executed today. But it's conditional. Contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. That kind of like means all the time. So I got a vision of my day that I'm going to carry with me all throughout the day. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So I turn my will and my life over to the care of God in the third step. By the 10th step, I've gone through, I see, and four that I maybe have a little distorted sense of reality. Somebody's pointed out how I'm a little delusional about my distortion. And five. And six, I pray for this willingness and I ask God to remove these things. And seven, I ask God to make me be useful. And in eight and nine, I go out and I start to clean up the past. So now, my power and God's power are in alignment, right? It's the proper use of the willpower. Okay, so then I get to carry that vision of God's will into my everyday activities. In the 11th step, after the evening review, it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. That means that as part of my evening review, I should probably create plans for the day, for the following day. I should create a vision of what I want tomorrow to show up like. Now, Wayne Dyer gives a great talk. I can't find it. I've been looking for it. It's a great talk about what God does, or what the universe does, or what Spirit does while I'm sleeping. If I set an intention in the morning, then the universe has a very small amount of time to rearrange my day to make it go that way. But if I set my intention for the following day, the night before, then the universe has all night to magically move the pieces around, to make all the things happen so that it goes just that way. That sounds cool. I'm going to not do that. But I do it, and then my day turns out that way or better. And so the idea of faith, you can't just have faith, right? Faith comes from experience. This guy, James Newton, he was friends with a couple guys you maybe heard of. Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Harvey Firestone, Alexis Carrel, and Charles Lindbergh, right? No big deal. Just a regular old dude. And he's probably, I haven't found this information, but it makes logical sense. He's probably the reason why the Oxford Group was so strong in Akron when Bill went there and had the business failure where he ended up meeting with Dr. Bob, because Harvey Firestone had a son named Bud, and Bud was an alcoholic. And so Jim Newton had gotten involved with the Oxford Group at the time, and Jim and Bud had gone out to Colorado to really get immersed in the Oxford Group, and Bud got and stayed sober. And so I assume, this is Brandon's theory, you can disregard it if you want, that Harvey Firestone, having the means, wanted his son to stay sober. So he started bringing in speakers and pumping money into the Oxford Group and really promoting it, because he wanted his son to stay well. So that when Bill comes bebopping along and runs into Dr. Bob, they're able to have this experience, which we now call Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, so this guy, Jim Newton, he tells this story in his book called Uncommon Friends. Great book. Where he talks about the relationship with those five guys. He's having a conversation with Charles Lindbergh, who was mostly agnostic, maybe a little bit atheist, about, like, how can you actually believe in this thing that you can't see, feel, hear, taste, touch? And it's all like trying to describe the color green to somebody who's never seen the color green before, right? You can describe the things that are green. You could maybe describe some of the emotion associated with green, but you can't really explain green using anything other than, well, it's green. So, but Jim Newton tries to explain to Charles Lindbergh, and he says he joined the swim squad in college, and there were these guys that were... He had his friends that were out there, and they were moving their arms and their legs out in the pool, and they were staying afloat. And he's sitting there grabbing on the side of the pool, and he's afraid that he's not going to stay afloat. And so the coach comes by and says, Jim, all you have to do is go out there and move your arms and your legs, and you'll stay afloat. Now, Jim believed... He believed he would stay afloat if he went out and moved his arms and his legs, because he saw other people doing it. But it wasn't until he let go of the side of the pool and he went out and he started moving his arms and his legs did he know that he would stay afloat. And so you have to believe in the thing that is already doing whatever it's doing before you can start to trust that that thing might actually have a better plan for your life than you do. And then when you have repeated action of success, that's how we develop faith. So, can you, how do you, electricity, right? How do you know it exists? So you can see the lights, right? Can you feel electricity?
Yeah.
Let's think about feeling electricity in a positive way, right? Yeah, heat, a fan, air, right? So you can feel it, you can see it. You can't really touch it necessarily. You can, but it might be way more exciting than you want. So the idea of electricity, do you know how it works? You understand how electricity works? See, electricity is kind of, it's weird because like water now, like we got a faucet, right? Where's the water? It's in the pipe, right on the other side of the valve. When you turn the faucet on, the water comes. So where's the electricity in the outlet?
Same thing.
It's not. It's what we think. It's not. The only way for electricity to work is a circuit has to be completed. Okay? You got a black or some other color that is the positive, and then you have a white, which is a neutral. Okay? And that black will run from the power source to the light switch, from the light switch to the light. The white will run from the light back to the wherever the panel is where the electricity comes from. That electricity is not in that light, and it's not in that switch until the circuit is completed. So the electricity is in the panel. But really, the electricity is not really in the panel. It's in the transformer. It's not really in the transformer. It's in the substation. It's not really in the substation. It's in the power station. And it's not really there. It's in the power plant. So when you turn that switch on, literally, it goes all the way back to source and comes back. But it's so fast you don't see it. Because electricity in the current system of the way that we do buildings, it's not right there. You can feel it.
It exists.
You can see it. But until the circuit is completed, you can't experience it. And that is God. Because it is not until you tap into source do you have any experience with it. If you never tap in, it's still there. It's still back at the power plant. Still back at the source. It's just you don't have access to it. Huh. What if? What could you do if you gained access to that electricity? I mean, it's endless, right? You can build shit, cook shit, cool shit. That's neat. Well, that's available to you here. But you have to tap into it. You have to refine the signal. You have to be willing to have an experience with whatever that is in order to have the experience. If the experience, you believe it doesn't exist, it doesn't. And then your ability to carry that experience into the lives of others is also not available to you. And the coolest experience is when you teach somebody else how to connect to source. And then you watch them light up. And then those people, remember the ones I was judging way back when that were at that retreat that the lights were on? You get to teach other people how to turn the lights on. You get to teach other people how to have that experience. And it is the coolest fucking thing. I'm a dad. I love being a dad. It is awesome getting to watch and grow and cultivate and experience a thing that was kind of you but not you. Morph and grow. Greatest experience ever. With the exception of, I get to watch people when I sponsor them grow and morph and change and become new people in a very finite period of time. Heard somebody say the other night, I only have 11 days. It's 12 now. I only have 12 days. Change the verbiage. I have 12 days. Because what I know, because I've been around and I've seen it enough, is that person with 12 days has the ability to touch somebody with no days a lot better than I do. A lot better than Rusty and Bruce and people that have time because they're closer to it. You ever looked at a child and you just, there's something ethereal about it, right? Just it's new. It's closer to source than you are. The person in early sobriety has access to information and experience that we only get reminded of as we're sitting across from the alcoholic or addict, reliving our experiences with them. Dr. Bob, in his story. If you haven't figured out, I like logic and math and stuff. It says, Dr. Bob's nightmare, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the birth of our society dates from his first day of permanent sobriety on June 10th, 1935. To 1950, the year of his death, he carried the AA message to more than 5,000 alcoholic men and women. No big deal. So, because I like to do things like this. Between June 10th and Dr. Bob's death, there's 175 months. 5,000 divided by 175 months is 28.57. So, Dr. Bob only sponsored a person every day of the year, every day of every month, and only took 2 days off. What are you doing? I've got a busy life. It's full. I've got a farm with animals and 4 kids and a job that keeps me on the road and sponsor, take countless people through the steps. And when I was asked to come here, I was excited about it. So I get to talk about my favorite subject other than me, which is God. And I get to share my experience with whatever this thing is that I don't even know what to call it anymore. It's an experience. And I hear so many people talk about how they're too busy to do this stuff. I've done a lot of figuring, and I basically come to the conclusion that I was given my employer about 3 solid hours of work every day. And other than that, I was either drinking, recovering from drinking, or thinking about drinking. So only 21 hours a day was I involved in the activity connected to alcohol. And so when somebody asks me, you know, to come meet them at a meeting and I just say I don't have time, well, that just sounds absurd. Because the amount of energy that I put into drinking, recovering from drinking or thinking about it was basically my entire life. And Dr. Bob probably says it best. He says, if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking and using for good and all, that sounds like forever, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have done in a habit of showing when you are getting another drink or another drug, your heavenly Father will never let you down. Guys, this stuff is not hard. It's not complicated. You can dissect it and crush it and snort it and do whatever you want with it. But it's pretty simple. The growth of my spirit is all I'm here for. It talks about it at the end of, or it, and it, after how it works, where we read it in all these meetings. It says, page 60. So it's like, what is the point of what we're doing here? What is the point of the steps? What is the point of meditation? What's the point of prayer? What's the point of making amends? What's the point of sponsorship? Well, it tells you right here. The paragraph right after the 12th step, it says, the point is, it's not hard to find, that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. So if I endeavor to grow along spiritual lines, if I make that the purpose of my life, I'm going to have a pretty kick-ass life. And a lot of other people will be helped, and a whole hell of a lot less of them are going to be hurt. So I think that's all I have to say. Thanks for listening.